I'm KGW's Rod Hill FM.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at the level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. I got a couple of things to put in front of you. Number one, what do you say about a system of criminal justice and policing in which a man is arrested, suspected of arson? He is then booked into custody and then released. And he goes out and is accused. He has a right to his day in court, but he's accused of starting more fires. Is that a kind of system that the public should accept, where they simply arrest people, book them, put them on paper, cut them loose, and then they go out and do it again? In this case, he's accused of doing it again. Let's be clear about that. That's one piece. The second piece is our X poll today. Should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? Now, I told you way back about a decade ago when Donald Trump first announced he was running for president, and I endorsed him. And I was glad to do that. A lot of other people did. Some people went the never Trump route, but then have become, friends of the president these days. The Trump administration has announced it's launching a program that lets Americans share their personal health data and medical records across health systems and apps run by private tech companies. Are you willing to trust big tech with your most personal health data? I would say no to that. I don't trust big tech. I don't trust the computerized systems. We're constantly hearing stories about major systems, those run by government and those run by the private sector, that are being hacked into. Would you trust your most personal health data to that kind of system? Now, President Trump, to his credit, has said this is an opt-in system. But I would ask you to question, how long is it going to be an opt-in system? Or is it going to be one of those opt-in systems where you can opt into it and you say, well, I choose not to. And they say, oh, well, then I'm sorry. There are certain services and certain companies and maybe even certain hospitals and institutions that you can't access unless you opt into that system. I think the opt-in and the choice is going to go away very, very fast, if not almost immediately. Should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? My answer to that is no. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find the question at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on my website at LarsLarson.com. And it's brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Yesterday's poll had to do with TikTok and the fact that TikTok now says that it's going to allow the people who use TikTok to help to police misinformation. And I pointed out to you, this is a promise from the Chinese Communist government of China, which controls ByteDance, which owns TikTok, because we still haven't seen the enforcement of the law that was passed that said TikTok either had to be owned by somebody other than China, preferably somebody in the United States, or it can't operate in America. And by the way, TikTok has about 170 million users in America, which means that about half the population uses it. I don't. I encourage people not to use TikTok, and I don't have a financial dog in the fight on that one. I don't trust TikTok because the Chinese Communist government uses it to spy on Americans, to gather data. And these days, with AI and supercomputers available to just about anybody, and especially to a major government like China, can you imagine when they can aggregate all of that data that might be gathered? And you might think, well, they're picking up on where I go shopping or what kind of car I drive or the things I do in my spare time. Yes, they are. And can you imagine if you could aggregate all that data, what it would be worth? And then imagine this, as we come up to next year's election, if the Chinese government wants to influence an election to go one way or another, Donald Trump has been tough on China. Joe Biden was bought and paid for by China. And I figure that Kamala Harris, who may be running for president again as well, she's bought and paid for by China as well. Do you think that China might have a dog in the fight in trying to influence Americans to put, say, somebody like Kamala Harris in the White House or somebody else that's very friendly to China? Yeah, I think they do. Well, I said, should we trust the CCP tied app TikTok? 93% of you said no to that question, and I did as well. Only 7% of you said yes to that question. But let me get back to the arsonist. Now, he was caught by the police, and as one of my loyal Lars listeners put it, a man arrested for arson, ink wasn't even dry on the paperwork when he let him loose. The police, let him loose, only to go out and set six more fires, allegedly, on the day of his release. The public needs to wake up and start electing some people with common sense. Well, Portland, in this case, because this was a Portland case, it involved the Portland Police Bureau, that is under the control of the brand new and largely incompetent city council. They promised that the new 12-member city council, which went into effect this year, would make much better decisions than the 5-member council that was the law for the longest, or the standard for the longest period of time. Here's what happened. On Tuesday, officers responded to a car fire in North Portland. Crews arrived at the scene. They found a burned car. Nobody had been hurt. Police arrested 35-year-old Aubrey Edwards. And one of the only places that's covering this is my old television alma mater, KPTV. Investigators believe that Edwards started another car fire in the same area earlier in the evening. He was initially arrested early on Wednesday morning, 1:30 in the morning. He was in jail for a couple of hours. He was booked, and then he was cut loose. And now the police believe he started another six fires in downtown Portland and North Portland. Now, Seattle sees the same kind of thing. The police and the courts and the cops, they arrest people, they run them through the system, they get paid their paychecks, and then oftentimes those people are simply cut loose. The second thing I want to point out to you, I can't tell you how many times on this program I've heard people tell me that hard drugs are a victimless crime. Things like heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, fentanyl, things like that. It went so far that voters actually passed ballot measure 110. And that basically legalized all hard drugs in Oregon. Now, the legislature fixed that a bit. They still didn't make it a serious crime, serious enough to force somebody into treatment. But consider this story out of Washington, where the courts actually threw out the state's drug law and the legislature really has not fully restored it. So what happened? A deputy had to shoot and kill a man because the man had broken into his parents' home. He told his mom and dad he had a gun, and he told them, "I'm going to kill both of you." The caller who called 911, the father or the mother, said the son had broken down the front door. He was inside the home. He was high on meth. He had been drinking, and he was threatening to kill his mom and dad. He left the scene on a bicycle, and about 10 minutes after the initial call to 911, a sheriff's deputy confronted the man, still armed with a gun, and had to shoot him. He died. Problem solved in that case. But somebody tell me that you think that hard drugs are a victimless crime. When people go out and do things like that, when drugs would drive you to the point where you go to your mom and dad and you say, "I'm going to kill both of you," you break into the house, you threaten them with a gun, and then they end up, or he ends up dead, and mom and dad now have lost their son. Tell me again that it's a victimless crime. Back in a moment with the Northwest nonsense. And would you believe a government agency in the Northwest spending almost $100,000 a year to put a single child in preschool? Back in a moment.
Welcome to Honestly Provocative Talk. But fair warning, if you're listening to this show, you're likely on the FBI's most wanted list. Welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
That makes a lot of sense, a lot of nonsense.
Right, you're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
that great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Can you imagine paying $92,000 a kid for daycare? That's exactly what Multnomah County did, handing out more than $800,000 of taxpayer cash to cover just 9 children in preschool. Now, I know I called it daycare. You know what preschool is? It's very expensive daycare. It really doesn't amount to much more than that. It doesn't actually make a long-term difference when it comes to education. But for parents, it's a very, very attractive deal to have somebody else paying the cost of daycare. And for the workers who work in it, especially when it's run by government and they require high standards like certifications and all that, you get a very nice paycheck for doing daycare. But it gets worse than that, folks. The county official who runs the Preschool for All program in Multnomah County also owns the private company that got the $800,000. Leslie Barnes pulls down a salary of more than $142,000 a year. Secretary of State Tobias Reed did an audit of Oregon's Preschool for All, finding more than $1 million in wasted funds. Only Reed protected the private providers who got all the cash by not releasing their names. Enterprising journalist Joanna Ho of Willamette Week dug through the spreadsheets to make that connection. More than half the wasted cash went to Leslie Barnes' private company. I will happily offer Ms. Barnes a chance to respond. I emailed her this morning, called and left a message. Do you think she's going to call me back, by the way? Here's the way I add it up. A county employee making a six-figure salary directs more than $800,000 to a company she owns that is currently operated by her family by her account. The Democrat Secretary of State helpfully hides the names, and as of this morning, well, you are only hearing about this expensive self-dealing by a government official in either Willamette Week or here on the Lars Larson Show. Cartel media just ain't doing the story. Glad to get your calls. If you want to join me on a Conspiracy Theory Thursday, it's 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in the X poll, you'll find it at Lars Larson Show on X. You'll also find it on the website at LarsLarson.com. Our question of the day, brought to you by Multnomah Medical Clinic. No pills, no shots, no surgery. Get better fast. Multnomah Medical Clinic. Marty Starkovich writes, Lars, you might want to check with what the Whatcom County Sheriff says about the illegal alien Jesus Penulius Agramon, who shot the Lummi police officer with 10 rounds. He's also wanted out of Colorado as well. The sheriff was on the radio last week saying they have not had any illegal aliens that they have in their jail, and they are not communicating with ICE. It'll be interesting if they also charge this guy with being an illegal alien in possession of a firearm. My favorite post on X so far today, and this has to do with Hillary Clinton and some of the just declassified documents that have come out in the last 2 days. Speaking of Hillary, she had a secret server hidden in her basement where she sent and received classified info. When those emails were subpoenaed, she deleted 33,000 of them. Then she smashed her BlackBerry phones with hammers and used bleach bit to wipe her server clean. She paid for the fake Steele dossier used to frame Donald Trump and kick off the entire Russia hoax. And let's be real, she probably knew all about her husband flying to Epstein Island to have sex with minors, and if she didn't, helped cover it up. So tell me again, why the hell isn't Hillary Clinton in jail? And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Presented by Oregon City Garage Door.
I want to give today's Daily Grill to Tina Kotek and Keith Wilson. Keith Wilson, of course, is the mayor of Portland. Tina Kotek is the governor of Oregon, two of Oregon's most prominent officials. And what are they doing now? They are going to the NBA, the National Basketball Association, and to Commissioner Adam Silver. They want to keep the Trailblazers in Portland. I wouldn't mind if they stayed in Portland, but what have they come out and said they support? They support the idea of renovating the Moda Center. Now, until a couple of years ago, the Moda Center was owned by the same organization that owns the Portland Trailblazers. And then they managed to hornswoggle the city of Portland, saying, hey, we'll sell you the Moda Center cheap, and we'll even sign a deal that says the Blazers will stay for at least the next 5 years. Do you know, I can't believe that people like Keith Wilson, who used to be in private business, Tina Kotek has always been in the government, so I don't think she has any experience in business. But imagine this, the same state whose ODOT claims that it is too broke to supply minimum road maintenance things like plowing snow in the wintertime is now promising literally hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer money to renovate a stadium to benefit the current or future owners of what is likely a $5 billion basketball team. Now, does that one make any sense to you? I mean, the state of Oregon claims it's broke. It has just passed some big tax increases. It plans to pass even more of them at the end of the month of August. And yet they're going to come up with $400 million because when I looked, the average cost of renovating an NBA or NFL stadium, but NBA stadiums in particular, is about $400 million. Moda only cost about $300 million to build. That was back in the early 90s, though. That's when Paul Allen paid out of his own pocket. He borrowed the money, but then he paid out of his own pocket to own his own stadium. Now the city of Portland owns the stadium, only it's one-third of a century old, and it actually badly needs, a renovation. None of that really concerns me, because if they stay, the Blazers, that is, I'm okay with that. If they go, I'm okay with that as well. I'm not okay with the idea of spending a few $100 million, even if they get it done on the cheap and they do it for, say, $300 million. Imagine telling taxpayers, we're going to spend $300 million of your money. What for? To renovate a building that has only belonged to the city of Portland for a short period of time. Well, why are we doing that? To make sure the Trailblazers stay in town. What if they leave anyway and you've already renovated the stadium? Well, in that case, then we have a very expensive, newly renovated white elephant that we don't have anything to put in. We don't have a tenant. Their major tenant is the Portland Trailblazers. So you're putting a lot on the taxpayers. And I've heard the argument, it benefits hotels, it benefits restaurants, it benefits bars. Fine. What about all the people who've never been to a Blazer game, never plan to go to a Blazer game, don't have any interest in it, and they don't benefit because they don't own a restaurant or a bar or hotel? Why are you asking them to pay the bill? And if a naysayer can tell me a good reason, I'd be glad to hear it. Today's best email is brought to you by Cap Concrete Coatings. Turn your garage, patio, or driveway from ugly and rough to beautiful and tough. I've seen it done. I've done it. I've had it done for myself by CapConcreteCoatings.com. 855-CAP that. I withheld this name. Lars, my son just turned 16, got his license, and received a letter with it. They're registering 16-year-olds to vote. If you read this, he has to opt out to not be registered. The DMV isn't checking ages for registering voters. Well, they are. And what they say is, we're going to register you to vote at 16, even though you can't cast a vote until you're 18. This is more of the Democrat Party saying, we need you signed up to vote. You probably won't vote your own ballot, so we will vote it for you. And that's how elections in Oregon and Washington get scammed for the Democrat Party.
The Lars Larson Show. What does Lars think about smoking the devil's lettuce?
I won't go schizo, will I?
It's a distinct possibility.
Now it's time to take a hit of Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. I have to tell you, in the last couple of weeks, one of the most controversial and crazy things you've ever heard is that if you have a boat in Oregon, you have to have a permit. Now, Tina and I have owned a sailboat in decades gone by. We've also owned a powerboat. And we always understood, if you have a boat longer than 9 feet and it has a motor, or even if it's shorter than 9 feet and it has a motor, you've got to have a permit. But then the greedy creeps down to the state capitol got so greedy, they said, what else can we tax? I know, let's slap a tax on kayaks and other unpowered floating toys. I don't know if it quite went to the extent some people suggested, which two inner tubes strapped together would qualify and require you to get a paddle permit to be able to put that boat on the water in Oregon. But that didn't sit well with Ben Roach, who joins me now. And Ben, I understand you're putting together the signatures to get this thing on the ballot.
Yes, I'm pleased to announce that we have just filed and been accepted from the Secretary of State our initiative petition. And we hope to get the signatures necessary to start get this thing repealed. Basically, we are asking to let us paddle. That's all we're asking.
And by the way, you don't have a problem with, say, requiring permits for powered watercraft, whether it's sailboats, powerboats, jet skis, wave runners, things like that. No objection to that. Or do you object to that? Do you think we should be able to use the rivers without getting a permit from the state?
No, I personally don't object to that. I mean, a typical motorboat has a bilge. It has where water can be trapped and should be washed and cleaned out. You know, we don't need to repeal or go back in time that far. But, you know, this House bill that they passed kind of in the dead of night, I have a number of representatives who didn't even realize it was going through that I've spoken to, expanded those permits and really went on beyond that. I mean, think about a paddleboard, a stand-up paddleboard, an inflatable one that many people have nowadays. That's a pressurized vessel. You're not going to have any invasive species climbing inside of that thing. It's they've just taken this bridge too far.
Well, and do you really think it was about invasive species, or do you think this is more about just they were looking for anything in the world they could slap a tax on, which seems to be the case with all the other increases that they did get voted through?
Well, you know, Lars, I agree with you, and I believe that they just want to bring in additional rent revenue, but this isn't what I believe. It's more about what Oregonians deserve, and I think they deserve access to their waterways without having to pay a permit to do so. I think this is beyond a partisan issue. This is beyond just a tax and spend issue. This is inhibiting our free exercise to be able to use public waterways and having to get a permit to drop an inflatable tube or a inflatable boat or a kayak into your little local lake or stream. Again, I think most reasonable Oregonians will find this to be a violation of our basic rights. So I don't think we should have permits to paddle. It's that simple.
I don't think we should either. And Ben, I admit, I no longer owned a boat. I even had a kayak, and it was not 9 feet long. It was just short of that, and I didn't have to have a permit on it. But I never minded buying the permit for the powered, you know, for either a sailboat or a powerboat, because in some ways, I was kind of proud of the fact that if you go skiing, you buy a snow park permit, and they go out and they use the money to plow the snow off the parking lot so you can go, you know, cross-country skiing or downhill skiing. If you own a boat and you pay the permit, as I understand it, the vast majority of the permit fees go to build the boat ramps and the pump-out stations and bathrooms and things like that that are used by the boaters, so you can say, I'm paying my own way. I don't have a problem with that. But the idea of taking what, and I'm not going to suggest that everybody on a paddleboard is a kid. I mean, there are lots of adults who do it as well. But this hits hard at kids. This is the state coming and saying, if you've got a little stand-up paddleboard and it's used by your 10-year-old, the 10-year-old has to have a permit just to set it on a piece of water in Oregon. I think that's crazy.
It's absolutely nuts. I camp every year at a particular lake. We call it our Independence Week. We do it on 4th of July week. I invite friends, family, anybody that wants to come. I own two kayaks and a paddleboard, and my daughter's friends own a few other paddleboards, and they're just out there on the shore for everyone to use. The fees that they're expecting, a $17 annual permit or $30 for a biannual permit, I mean, they're raking in several hundred dollars just from my own recreation alone, and that impacts my family. So that's why I'm passionate about it, and I agreed to join in on with my friends and the chief petitioners on this ballot measure initiative.
By the way, does it have,
saying we're not.
Sorry, Ben. I thought you'd stop. But does it have to wait till 2026, or can we get it done sooner?
So that's actually a great thing to bring up. I'm glad you did. I've already spoken with at least one legislator who, admittedly, voted for this bill and has buyer's remorse and has agreed during the short session to repeal it, to try to reframe it and rephrase it to bring it back to reality. Now, again, but our next short session isn't until 2026. Do you think Tina Kotek will let this hit the floor in the special session? I doubt it.
Well, even though you would think that they would look at this and say, I mean, most politicians, Republican or Democrat, they care about being popular with the voters. Can you, I mean, if they've seen the way that average folks, even folks who don't own a paddleboard, even folks who've never sat in a kayak, say, that's just stupid, stop doing that. I would think that they could throw that one up for a vote, and it would get voted through very quickly in both houses, and done, you don't have to go out and spend time and effort to put it on the ballot.
Well, I wish it was that easy, Lars, but as you know, the Democrats set the agenda. They are the supermajority in the House and the Senate. They set the agenda. The governor decides what happens during a special session. So they don't go back into actual session to be able to supply their own. We can't submit our own bills. The Republicans or the Democrats can't submit new bills until the short session in 2026. So again, unless Tina Kotek allows them to put this as an amendment to her transportation bill, you think that's going to happen?
No.
Maybe, but hey, maybe some of
actually,
your listeners that...
You know what? That wouldn't be a bad idea. Hook it onto it and say, I know she's... I mean, she didn't get $15 billion. She tried for two. You know, so when somebody... When you're negotiating with somebody, they say, I want $15 billion or $15,000. And then they say, if not 15, how about $2,000? No, you won't give us that either. And that's what they said to those two. I don't know what she's going to ask for in this special session. I suspect it's going to be still in the multi-billion dollar range. But I know she's... she's confined in getting what she wants to get. But if the Republicans are anxious to get her to sign off on something, say, hang the paddleboard repeal on this thing and you can get some votes, they might just try it.
Well, that's a great idea. But you remember quid pro Joe?
Yes.
Once you do that, you say, what are you going to give up to do this? And the Republicans will get hung on their petards for capitulating on a gas tax. So I've worked in this political realm for a few years now. I was
yep.
the past chair of the Linn County
yeah.
Republican Party, and I see how Republicans love to circle the firing squad when we should be circling the wagons. So I think it's a great idea, Lars, but I think a lot of the Republicans are going to be careful about negotiating with.
Well, then let's throw it on the ballot. And Ben, tell my audience how they can help you out. You've got to have a website. You've got to have contact info. How do people get that?
Well, Lars, you are so gracious to get me on your show today. We do have a website registered. It's not online yet. It's letuspaddle.com or letuspaddle.org. I'll try to get that online as soon as possible, getting our website domain set up. We just set up a political action committee with our treasurer, and it's going to cost money to make this happen. So please consider donating. Send money to Let Us Paddle, P.O. Box 512, Independence, Oregon, 97351. That's Let Us Paddle PAC, P.O. Box 512. Independence, Oregon, 97351. And then look at Facebook. You can find us as Oregonians Against Paddle Permits on Facebook group. And you can also maybe see some of my stuff on my Substack, which is bensviewpoint.substack.com.
I got to tell you something, Ben. You got to be some kind of internet wizard. How is letuspaddle.com still a domain that's even available? Or did you have that one reserved for a while?
I got it about 2 weeks ago. I've got letuspaddle.org, letuspaddle.com, and letuspaddle.info.
Yeah, get another one. It's called Democrats Fun Killers for Kids. You know, because I want to lay it. They're out to kill childhood. They're out to wipe out the kids on the paddleboards. It's Tina Kotek and the rest of her Democrat army. That's Ben Roach. You can find. We'll get you all the contact info if you need. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
Facebook, X, and Google may censor you, but you'll never find censorship here.
Don't censor me!
This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and this segment of the show is brought to you by 540training.com, concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. And our question today on X, should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? This is an idea launched by the Trump administration, and ordinarily you'd say, well, Lars, you must agree with it. It has to do with Donald Trump. No, I told you, when I disagree with President Trump, I feel no problem with saying so. There are 60 companies, including the major tech companies, Google, Amazon, Apple, United Healthcare Group, CVS Health, and all the rest. They are going to share patient data in the system. The president says it'll be an opt-in system. I don't trust that. Should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? I would answer that one no. You can answer it any way you like. You'll find it at Lars Larson Show and brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. To your calls now. Start with Sean. Hey, Sean, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars. So I agree with Ben. We need to repeal the location device tax that they're trying to put on us.
The paddle tax? Let's just call it the paddle
tax. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
The paddle tax. So I'm just wondering, you know, do they plan on charging the homeless that are living in the dilapidated boats?
Oh, no. The homeless are harmless is the way they view
right.
it. And that we're supposed to just the homeless. There was actually, sorry to divert, but there was a video post. I think Kevin Dahlgren put it up, and it was a woman living
right.
on the streets, and she didn't appear to be too far gone. I mean, she looked like she could still communicate, and she was explaining to Kevin Dahlgren, well, you don't understand. We have all the rights. We have people who do things for us. I mean, they have people who provide them with food, with medical care. Anytime they want a cop, they call a cop. And she was going on and on. She called people like you and me civilians because they're, you
right.
know, they're kind of like homeless royalty. And we're the schlubs who show up to work every day and work and pay our tax and all that. And they're more like an elite group of people. Can you believe that?
Exactly. Well, you know, I pay $700 to $1,000 a week in taxes. And that's what they want. You know, they want that money. They don't care about the ones that aren't paying any taxes because they can't get anything out of them.
No, they can't. So they made themselves, what is it, lawyers call them, judgment proof? That means you could get
right.
a judgment for $1 million against a guy or a gal who doesn't have 2 cents to rub together, and you can't do anything with it. And so if you have somebody who says, I don't show up for a job, I don't pay taxes, I don't obey the law, and nobody makes me obey the law, so then where does that leave the rest of society? It leaves us in a bad spot. Let's go to John. Hey, John, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, before I get into my issue, can you confirm the rumor that you have more guns than John Wick?
No. John Wick and Keanu Reeves both have many more guns than I do.
Okay, as far as the comment about Hillary Clinton, you know, was it Comey that said that no reputable
I think no responsible prosecutor would bring charges against her. And Comey, it sounds like, was in the thick of these most recently revealed documents. The documents that show that not just Hillary. Oh, you asked the question. Hillary, Obama, Biden, they were all in on it. Clapper, Brennan, Comey, all of those people, and I hope they all end up in orange jail jumpsuits and a pair of bracelets.
Well, as far as Hillary, I think the comment was truthful because I think if anybody tried to prosecute her, they'd get an extreme case of Arkansas. And as far as all those other guys, you know, I know you won't agree with me on this, but I think they're talking about sending in a team to deal with them.
What does that mean, sending in a team? A team of what?
Well, I think they're talking. Well, I'm talking about what the attorney general is saying. She's going to have that investigation.
Oh, yeah, she's going to have some kind of task force, and I hope they bring indictments against these people.
Well, you know what, team? I'd like to see SEAL Team 6 deal with it. That's going to be the only way we get true justice.
You know, John, the funny thing is, you may think that's funny, but as far as I'm concerned,
I want realistic
solutions. I want to see them charged with the federal crimes they committed. Hillary Clinton, too, and James Comey, and Brennan, and Clapper, and Obama, and Biden. And I don't care if Joe Biden would show up in a courtroom, oh, he's a poor old man, he's senile, he barely knows what kind of ice cream he's eating right now. As far as I'm concerned, I want to see all those people charged with crimes. They richly deserve to have that happen. And if we could get them convicted, and I know there are people who are saying, why? Convicting somebody like a former president, well, we have a former president who was charged with crimes, and they weren't even real charges. I mean, phony charges of fraud in which nobody lost any money and everybody was happy with the outcome. By the way, let me give you one more legacy of open borders Joe and his open borders policies. Umberto Lopez Rodriguez, formerly of Renton, Washington, sentenced to 5 years in prison for drug trafficking. He's going off to the federal pen in Lompoc, California. And what did they find when they did the raid? 84,000 fentanyl pills, more than a kilo of fentanyl powder, 32 kilograms. That's about, what is that? That's about 65 pounds of cocaine, 15 kilos of meth, 3 kilos of heroin. Oh, and they found $71,000 and 18 firearms. So the kind of things you get under a Joe Biden open borders policy, guess what? You end up with real trouble. And we need to get rid of these illegal aliens and take our country back. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.
This is a piece of stuff.
On the air. Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one fat-ass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network. Lars and Lars. Now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on the Radio Northwest Network. I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails. We got some big breaking news, and I want to get into that. And I thought, well, I had planned to talk to Elizabeth New from the Center for Worker Rights and Healthcare at the Washington Policy Center. But Elizabeth, I want to give you a little heads up about something that's happening. And I suspect that even though this one deals specifically with Portland, I'd be willing to bet that Seattle is going to do the same kind of thing. Welcome back to the show, by the way.
Hi. Thanks for keeping the issue I think we're talking about in front of readers.
Well, I know, but I've got to change the subject a little bit, and I think you'll understand why, Elizabeth. What do you call a person who's willing to sell out what they claim are their most closely held values in exchange for money?
A traitor?
A Northwest politician. or a Democrat Northwest politician, because this literally came down in about the last 10 minutes or so. You're aware that President Trump has said to all these cities across the whole landscape of America, including the Northwest, where some of the craziest stuff goes on. He said, you're discriminating against people under the guise of DEI. You're discriminating on race. You're discriminating on gender, on pronouns, on all these things. You're to stop that and comply with federal law, or I'm taking away your federal funds. Well, the city of Portland was looking at losing $333 million, specifically $349 million. And the mayor of Portland just announced that they are going to, as they say, preserve the federal funding. And by that, they mean, and I'm kind of wondering whether they're going to do this by appearing to do the right thing, change words, and not actually do it. But what they do say they're going to do, they're going to get rid of DEI. They're going to get rid of, change the sanctuary status, or what it doesn't do is change the sanctuary status, eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion. Somehow they're saying that they are going to keep the federal money, but keep on doing all the stuff that Trump said was going to make the federal money go away. So I'm not sure exactly how they're going to make this happen, but it does seem that they're willing to do a lot to be able to hang on to that cash.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't heard that yet. And, you know, federal funding is important. You're seeing that in this situation, in healthcare and Medicaid reform, all of that has gone on, that they're going to have to at least change semantics and disguise things in a way that they haven't been before. So it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Well, because should citizens accept that? If they say, oh, so you're still going to do the discrimination, you're still going to do diversity, equity, inclusion, which has turned into so many train wrecks, a fire chief in Austin, Texas, a mayor in Cincinnati, and their most recent, you know, horrible gang beating of two white men and a white woman by a mob of black people, and the diversity hire who's the police chief, diversity hires who are airline pilots, military pilots, air traffic controllers, and all that. I mean, the tragedy of DEI is that people end up getting killed because of DEI. And now you've got a mayor saying, we're not giving up DEI, but we're also not giving up the cash. I'm not sure exactly how they plan to thread that needle, but that's what they have announced, that we're going to stick with our values, but we're not giving up the cash, and we're still going to do DEI, but we're not going to discriminate. You're in charge of the Center for Worker Rights. What do you do if you're a company and you say, we practice DEI? You know, what is it in the simplest terms, Elizabeth, when, say, Boeing says that we are a DEI, global DEI employer? It means that when you hire people, you don't just hire them on skills and abilities. You hire them in part based on skin color, based on sexual preference, based on pronoun. And that means sometimes you're going to hire people who are not as qualified, but hire them because of their personal characteristics. That's what Trump is trying to get rid of. And the cities are the city in this case, Portland, but I suspect Seattle would probably do the same thing because they're up against deadlines saying we want the money, but we want to keep on discriminating too.
Well, knowing nothing, I know nothing, but I would think DEI includes more than just quotas, right? It includes training sessions, and, you know, my kids are in community college here. It means sessions for them to sit through about how they're supposed to treat other people, et cetera. So I think DEI, saying you're a DEI company or state, can mean a lot more than you're filling a quota, and maybe that's what they're talking about.
Maybe so, but I mean, I think that's, to me, that's a lot of cover. Because if you say we're going to train people, okay, you're training the HR person. Should the HR person just hire the most qualified applicants who come up for any job? Should the HR manager treat all employees alike? Or should there be special allowances made for people based on being part of a, you know, protected minority group? Whether it's gender minority, racial minority, sexual minority, faith minority. You know, they're trying to have it both ways, and I don't think it's going to work. I think they're going to find themselves getting cut off unless they actually mean they're going to change. And we've already seen a bunch of examples where universities will say, yeah, we're going to change the name of all this stuff, but we're going to keep on doing the DEI. And I think DEI is institutionalized racism. Racism, sexism, genderism, whatever ism you want, it's saying, because if you just said, we're just going to hire the best people, well, what if the best people who come in happen to be mostly white or mostly male?
Right.
Or in the case of nurses, mostly female. Okay, go ahead. You're hiring the most qualified people. That's not DEI. DEI is saying you've got to have a diverse workforce no matter what you have to compromise to get to it.
I think they're going to find the wiggle room here and say they're holding to their principles, but they couldn't lose the federal funds. I think they'll find a way to do it.
I think they'll try. I think it's going to be interesting to try and see how they manage that, because if they don't change their hiring practices, I think they're going to find themselves under investigation. I mean, this is like the states that are being, I mean, both Oregon and Washington are under investigation for violating Title IX. You say, well, how are we violating Title IX? We just let trans women who are actually biological men run against the girls and beat the girls at most sports. And you say, we are following the law, because those men who call themselves women are actually women or girls. And you say, no, they're not. Well, we say they are, so therefore we're not discriminating against anybody. This is the kind of doublespeak that you get. It is like we've dropped into George Orwell's novel.
Yeah, we're going to have to follow it close. And, of course, if you take any of this with job applications, at least, and down to the person, if you are the most qualified person for the job, is it right that you were passed over because of your skin color, whatever that is?
Nope. And don't ask the faculty at Harvard, because they will tell you, if we had to take the most qualified students, half the kids here would be Asian. And there would be very few black or Hispanic students here unless they were very well academically qualified. Harvard would tell you, we're doing the right thing by actively discriminating against some groups and in favor of other groups. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a violation of not just federal law and state law. It's a violation of the U.S. Constitution. That's Elizabeth New. And I'm sorry to Elizabeth for changing the subject, but that news just came down. City of Portland is desperate to hang on to that $1/3 of a billion in federal funds, but they say they are not going to change DEI or anything else. I don't know how they can do both. We'll be back in a moment. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday, and you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
On Blue Sky at Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. And about 1 hour ago, the 25th biggest city in America, that's Portland, has announced that it is going to comply with Donald Trump's anti-DEI initiative by keeping all of its DEI initiatives but still telling the federal government we'd sure love to keep getting that $349 million. Let me tell you why I think this is so hugely dishonest. And again, I've said this before, but it sounds like we dropped right into 1984, the George Orwell novel, and that we're engaging in doublethink. That what the city is saying is we're still going to do all that DEI stuff. We're just not going to call it DEI. And they say it explicitly. This broke about an hour ago. Let me give you all the details. But if you want to jump into this conversation, I'm wondering if they really think that the people back at the DOJ, you know, Attorney General Pam Bondi and Donald Trump are dumb enough to be taken in by this kind of subterfuge from an American city that says we're still going to do the DEI stuff. But we want the cash, so please give us the cash, and we're going to give up the words. Let me go through the document that was released about 1 hour ago, and I'll invite your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And if you want to vote in our X poll, you'll find the question at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com, my website. So what did they announce an hour ago? Portland executive order from the mayor preserves federal funding, maintains commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. There are so many contradictions in this, you can barely count them all. It starts out by saying that the mayor has issued this EO, an executive order, requiring the city of Portland to adjust its programs or policies that are at risk of violating federal anti-discrimination laws. Nice that Keith Wilson finally got around to that. He's effectively admitting, yep, we've been violating the federal anti-discrimination laws. We will change that. About time. And he says, although this decision has been challenging, it is in the best interest of Portlanders. There's the first contradiction. You've got the mayor of a city saying our policies violate federal anti-discrimination law, but it's been tough to figure out how to stop violating federal anti-discrimination law. Losing federal funding would harm the very people that many of our city programs are designed to help. Now, they then go on to detail the $349 million that they stand to lose. 90% of it goes to housing and transportation. So they say in the next couple of weeks, the first $31 million of that has to be signed. They have to sign the contracts. And to get the money, the city has to certify that Portland complies with the lawful grant requirements like federal anti-discrimination law. So how are they going to do that? I mean, he goes on into a lot of other detail, but here's where they boil it down, and here's where I think the biggest contradictions come. The city of Portland is getting $349 million from the feds. Last year, Portland got $98 million from the feds, 90% to housing and transportation. What this says is that what the executive order does ensures compliance with federal anti-discrimination laws as defined by the federal judiciary. Not as defined by the courts, by the Congress, but by the courts. Here's, though, what it says it doesn't do. It does not change Portland's sanctuary city status. Well, hold on a second. So you're going to treat that you're going to have the police and other law enforcement entities treat illegal aliens differently, but that's still not discriminating against Americans in favor of illegals. It says it does not change the city's adopted core values, including equity and anti-racism. And here's the key part. It does not eliminate the city's diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, their policies. But it does remove the words diversity, equity, and inclusion from the city's communications. So in other words, they say we're going to keep on doing the same policies we've been doing. And I've told you before, a lot of people misunderstand what DEI is. Diversity, equity, and inclusion would be, for example, say you ran a government agency, or say you ran a college or a university, or say you ran a small company. And you said, why? We've noticed that most of our workforce, most of our student population, most of the people who work at the police bureau or at the water bureau, we've noticed that most of them are white men. And we say, well, that's not diverse. So we have to increase diversity. What does that mean? It means we have to hire more people of color. We have to hire more women. We have to hire more people who are gay. We have to hire more people who go by pronouns. Okay, how are you going to do that? if you don't do it by discrimination, if you do it, if you simply say, when job openings come up, we will give them to the highest qualified person. Well, if that's what you've been doing for the last several decades, and you have a most, for example, mostly male and mostly white population of workers, how are you going to change that so that it is something that is, say, 50-50 men to women? Say that you have 30% of your workforce is going to be people of color to match the population of the United States. And there's another question. Do you try to match the population of the United States? Do you try to match the population of your city, your county, your state? And if you're going to still do diversity, equity, and inclusion, how does it change anything to remove the words diversity, equity, and inclusion from all of the city's communications? It's almost like they're saying out front of Trump and the DOJ, we're going to change what we call DEI, but we're still going to do DEI. I mean, it'd be like somebody saying, hey, I want to go out and have some booze. You say, well, we don't call it that. We call it an adult beverage. Let's you and I go get an adult beverage. If everybody understands that adult beverage means a beer, a glass of wine, or a shot of whiskey, then everybody knows what's going on. So are they only, and if you're truly going to keep all of those policies, then why are you going to get rid of the words? And it says this right in the mayor's executive order. Remove the words diversity, equity, and inclusion, but keep the policies diversity, equity, and inclusion. So in other words, they're going to lie to the federal government. They're going to say, why, we got rid of all that DEI stuff. We took all the words out of all the city policies, out of all the emails from the mayor and the city council. We got rid of those words. Are you still doing the stuff those words describe? Yeah, we're still doing all of that. We just don't call it by those words anymore. I really think the folks at City Hall, including Keith Wilson, Keith has been on this show before. He promised that he'd always be willing to come back. He never has. I'd love to ask Mayor Wilson, do you really think that the people at the DOJ, especially Harmy Dillon, who's in the civil rights office of the DOJ, do you really think that she's so crazy and so foolish and so stupid that when you take those words out of your policies, but you're still doing the policies, you're still hiring with racial preferences, sexual preferences, gender preferences, sexuality preferences, that when you're still doing all that, you just took the words off of it? Do you think that people back at the DOJ are six-year-olds? Do you really think you can fool them by doing that? And, of course, there are still the lawsuits going on. San Francisco via Trump, King County via Trump, the city along with King County, Washington, and other cities filing a lawsuit against the HUD requirements that they go along with federal immigration enforcement. I mean, all of this just suggests that the folks who are running Portland and Seattle are not terribly bright, and they think the DOJ is just as dumb. Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls. 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland. Are you experiencing technical difficulties?
That electrician must be a Democrat.
No technical difficulties here. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know, we often say, or I often say, that America is an exceptional country. And of course, you have the other folks like Barack Hussein Obama, who says, yeah, America's no more exceptional. And Americans just think that the same way French people think that France is exceptional, or people in the UK think that the UK is exceptional, except that even today, almost every day, we see some example of why America is an exceptional country, because we have God-given rights, and one of those is free speech, and then it is protected from government interference. It's not a grant of a right. It is a protection from the government interfering with your free speech rights in the First Amendment. And this week kind of put this on high display because the United Kingdom actually does threaten free speech, and that threat may actually extend across the Atlantic Ocean. Patrick Hedger joins me now, Director of Policy at NetChoice. Hey, Patrick, welcome back.
Hey, thank you for having me.
I want to know what you thought of the fact that the White House has warned Keir Starmer, the PM in the UK, knock it off with the threats against American tech companies when it comes to free speech. What should we make of that?
Yeah, so first off, this is a great thing that the president is doing. It's a huge departure from the Biden administration, who we saw continuously cooperating with the Europeans to overregulate and censor Americans online. What is happening in the European Union and happening in the UK this week is that they are putting in place laws that require websites and web services to essentially prove the age of their users. And what's happening is that people are being forced to show ID to use things like Spotify, use very basic services where there's really no kinds of, you know, pornographic content or things like that, because the law is so expansive and the penalties are so severe. And while the U.S. is exceptional, and I completely agree with you, your opening on it, it was perfect. Unfortunately, some of those laws are being proposed here in the United States, and NetChoice, we've been fighting those.
Well, and in fact, I know that people, there is a thorny issue, and we always knew that we'd run up against thorny issues when you say, well, what happens when safety concerns collide with constitutional rights? And we call them constitutional rights. They're God-given rights that are protected from government interference by the Constitution. And I always want to make sure and make that distinction. But you say, I want to protect my kids from getting into things online that would be bad for my children. Okay, let's make that happen. How do we make that happen? And how does the UK's example, this Online Safety Act, how is this an example of how not to do it?
Yeah, so the UK's example is a top-down regulatory regime where you put huge penalties on companies to prove them, make sure that their users are all of age. And that requires you handing over your ID to use those services. And that really blows a huge hole in anonymous speech, which is another fundamental American value. We saw this week as well an app that was hastily built and launched, this T app, was hacked, and all of the users had all of their IDs and their private messages put online and associated with their IDs. So that is the what we want to avoid. What we should be doing is funding programs in the K-12 system and also at the public education level to inform parents and students how best to keep themselves safe online. Show parents where existing parental controls are, right? All of these things that we want to use to protect our kids exist on our devices. They exist at the internet service provider level, and they exist at the website level. What we need to be doing is a better job of educating people how to turn those on for themselves, not having the government come in and say, show an ID to use this website.
Well, and not only that, but Patrick, let me make it clear to people, and you tell me if I'm wrong about this. If you say, well, you have to take ID, it proves that you're old enough. The same way if you wanted to walk in and buy alcohol somewhere, or in some states, marijuana, and you say, prove how old you are. In most cases, you show your ID, a person looks at it, says, yep, that's you on that license, and yes, you're old enough, and that's it. But they don't keep a record of it. But when it comes to online services, I know, I suspect that this Online Safety Act in Great Britain is saying, well, you have to take the ID and you have to maintain a copy of it. Otherwise, companies would just say, oh, yeah, we checked their ID, but we didn't keep a copy of it. Well, if you don't keep a copy of it, then how do you prove to the government regulators that you're actually demanding ID and looking at the ID and making sure somebody is old enough? And if you do keep it, then it's stuffed in a database somewhere where it's hackable. So it doesn't work to do it that way, or am I misstating any of that, Patrick?
No, you are 100% on target. I couldn't have said it better myself. And I'll just add to that, the comparisons to things like gambling or other vices, you know, access to recreational drugs or alcohol, those things are not in the Constitution. You have a right to access to speech and be able to speak online. And to have to show an ID to do that is patently unconstitutional.
Well, and in fact, it applies. I mean, I think in some cases, people mostly think of this as we want to make sure that kids aren't getting online and, say, accessing porn or becoming accessible to perverts out there. And so you think of it that way. And yet this would also apply if you said, I want to get on this website and I want to sound off and give my opinion. Okay, prove you're old enough to take part in this conversation. They take your ID, they keep a copy of it, and then later on when somebody says, hey, Who was that Patrick guy who kept making, you know, comments about the president or about national security or anything else? And all of a sudden, you can be tracked down from your free speech or as a result of your free speech. And that then begins to impinge not just on free speech rights, but liberties where, you know, what happens when a government, probably not the U.S. government, although I don't entirely trust the U.S. government right now. We had a DOJ that deliberately said, parents who show up at school board meetings and sound off, they are potential domestic terrorists. So imagine that bunch, you know, most of whom are gone from the DOJ and the FBI, but imagine that bunch with access to a social media saying, show me all the people who've gone on and made critical statements about whatever subject it is. And they say, oh, here you go. Here's their name, their address, their date of birth, their social security number, their home address, and here's a picture of them. Does anybody want the U.S. government to have that kind of thing and be able to tie it in with people engaged simply in vigorous free speech, which is what the First Amendment was there to protect?
Yeah, you know what? Never think in public policy, law, whatever. Never think about a law or a policy and how the person you voted for would implement it. Think about it and how the person you voted against would implement it and see if it's a good idea. Because you're exactly right. Any of this can be abused. Privacy can be violated. But at a very basic level, you have people in the United Kingdom that are getting on and saying, you know what, this isn't worth it. And you're deterring speech. And even deterring speech is a big problem.
Yeah, and in fact, well, Patrick, you know, we've had Supreme Court decisions that talk about a chilling effect. You don't actually have to prohibit somebody from speaking. The Supreme Court has said before, if you do things that chill speech, like when the police would occasionally, in days gone by, raid a newsroom. Every time the local newspaper or TV station did a critical story on the mayor or the governor or the police chief, all of a sudden the police would come in and do a raid on a newsroom. You say, that's a bit of a chilling effect because it means the news director or the owner of the station says, hey, why are the police always raiding us? Well, they do it every time we do a story that makes the mayor or the governor or the police chief look bad. Well, then stop doing that. And that's the effect you would have. You would chill free speech. Now, Great Britain doesn't have free speech protections. America does. And I want to hang on to mine.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And the best way we can hang on to them, these laws are not isolated to the European continent. We are seeing versions of them introduced at the state level, where we're not just talking about age verification for things like pornography. We're talking about age verification for social media, right? Getting on YouTube, getting on Facebook, getting on X. These laws are being proposed, and NetChoice has sued a lot of these laws, by the way, at the state level.
Absolutely. That's Patrick Hedger, who is Director of Policy for NetChoice. Patrick, it's always a pleasure. Back in just a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Coming up on the Radio Northwest Network, what happens when somebody comes and smashes your windows out?
Everyone's favorite color is gold.
I can proudly proclaim that the golden age of America is upon us.
Sit back and enjoy. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Clearly, he's not mentally stable, but clearly, he's going to do again. Who is going to protect me?
Yeah, that is a woman in Kenmore, Washington. Her name is Deborah Christner, and she says she cannot go back to her house because of threats from her neighbor, who is recorded on video smashing out her windows in the middle of the night earlier this month. Now, I'll credit Como News for doing a great job with this story, but imagine this. A man in your neighborhood has begun to act in a very bizarre way. He starts to make paranoid accusations. He says, "You're spying on me through the walls." And then he comes to your house armed with a shovel and does a job on your windows. Listen to what it sounded like.
You want to f*** with me? You! F*** with me again! Evil!
Evil. Now, that guy was contacted by the police. So, she has all her windows smashed out. She spent thousands of dollars on repairs. And what happens when she calls the police? Sadly, the Como story details that nothing, Nothing much at all. She says, my safety, my security, my home is violated. Everyone has to tiptoe around somebody because they have mental health issues. I don't care. He has destroyed my home. He has destroyed another family's home, and they have a child. You know, what those videos show is this guy, apparently unprovoked, coming over with a big shovel and smashing her windows in. I think that this mystery man, who's not being named right now, he probably ought to be glad that Ms. Christner does not have a pistol, because I can imagine the reaction of most of us if somebody came to your house and began smashing the windows out using a shovel as a weapon. I think that most of us would take that as a threat to the life and the safety of members of your family. But what happens when you call the police? Well, Kenmore police came, according to the Como News story. They arrested the man for felony malicious mischief. Now, that doesn't sound like it's going to land you in the King County Jail for very long, and it didn't. The prosecutors took a look at it, and they said, we're not going to file any charges against this man. And they offered up this excuse, which some of my friends, Josh Markey is one of them, who's a former prosecutor, say, in order for prosecutors to charge a crime, they must show that a defendant has what the law calls malicious intent while committing the crime. Wouldn't you say that the circumstances of showing up at somebody's house after dark with a shovel, smashing their windows out, and shouting threatening things like, take a listen again to what that woman had to hear.
You want to f*** with me? F*** you! F*** with me again! F*** evil! F***.
I'll tell you what, why don't you bring the indictment? Bring the indictment, put it in front of a grand jury, show them the video, because that's just the audio, but show them the video, and then say to the jury, now, in order to bring a charge against this man, you tell the grand jury, we have to find that he had malicious intent. Do you suppose if you showed them that video of this man smashing out thousands of dollars worth of windows and shouting the kinds of things, most of which we had to beep out because we can't use that kind of language on the radio, do you suppose that a jury of seven average people, a grand jury, would find that he had malicious intent? But Casey McNerthney, who is a spokesperson for the King County Prosecutor's Office, who are usually about as worthless as the day is long, as far as I'm concerned. King County Prosecutor, they sound like they were one of those George Soros specials. I don't know if the King County Prosecutor got money from George Soros, but he certainly has the same point of view. They say this defendant was clearly suffering from a mental health crisis, and under the circumstances detailed by police of his mental health crisis, really, are the police mental health experts who can diagnose that? It would be difficult, if not impossible, to prove malicious intent under the law. I would suggest you take it to a grand jury. Let the grand jury decide should charges be brought. Do you think that most grand juries would have to take more than about 10 seconds after they saw that video, heard the things that the man was shouting, saw the damage that he did, and imagine themselves inside that house with broken glass raining down all over your house and a man outside shouting crazy things while swinging a shovel? Do you think they'd take very long at all to bring the charge and then put it in front of a jury? Now, they say when we first received the case, we didn't have these videos. What was noted in the report is that there was a mental health crisis. What prosecutors want is for this neighbor and the community to be safe and the behavior to stop. That's what's got to happen. Well, it's about time that the police and the prosecutors and the judges got together. I began the show today by telling you about a man suspected of arson and arrested for setting cars on fire, and they booked him in and then promptly released him from custody. That happened in Portland, and within hours, the man is suspected to have started six more fires. Do you think that you're protecting the community in that case? And in the case of this crazy guy living next to this woman has already said, my house is wrecked, I am going to have to move. I have to find another place to live. Well, where do you go to live if you live in King County? And if King County and the police of various cities, Kenmore or Seattle or whatever, are unwilling to protect the public, and if you're unwilling to, say, buy a firearm, and when somebody acts in a threatening way, kill them. I mean, I don't see that you're giving citizens any choice. And then you're going to have all the liberals wringing their hands saying, oh, my goodness, this poor man, he was just mentally ill and he got shot to death. Tell you what, if you start threatening people's lives and the police will not do what they have to do and the judges and the prosecutors won't either, they may have no choice. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network.
The Lars Larson.
Exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
President Trump is one badass president. He secured the border at a level we've never seen before.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
For our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
So the only people that are crying are the mediocre white boys.
Here's your host.
Quiet, please.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on Conspiracy Theory Thursday. You know, I'm not an economist, so we often get economists on the show to talk about the things that are going on. And I know that one of the things that affects just about everybody out there, whether you're buying a car, buying a house, whether or not you work for a company that's trying to expand, the cost of money, the interest rate that you have to pay on money makes a huge difference. And we've all been waiting for those interest rates to go back down for a whole host of reasons, except the folks most in charge and able to manipulate this are, of course, the weird animal known as the Federal Reserve, which has now decided to leave interest rates untouched. So I thought I'd get with Professor Andrew Levin, who's a professor of economics in Hanover, New Hampshire at Dartmouth College. Professor, welcome to the program.
Hello.
So was the Federal Reserve right to leave the interest rates where they were, or was Jerome Powell just getting even with Donald Trump for embarrassing him about the obscene cost of their new Taj Mahal?
Well, I think yesterday was a remarkable meeting, the first time in about 30 years that two members of the Federal Reserve Board, which is the D.C. headquarters, two of them actually dissented from the Fed chair. In many ways, the way the Federal Reserve has tended to work over the last decade is the Federal Reserve chair is like a monarch. They're kind of the king. Yes. And everyone else are referred to as deputies and subordinates, and they all kind of go along with whatever the chair wants to do. And so you might say yesterday was a kind of miniature rebellion in some way.
Are you taking your professional life in your hands when you choose to contest what the king has to say?
That's a great question. I think what you do see is that the legacy media have tended to be very deferential to the Federal Reserve. Actually, the financial markets tend to be deferential. There's an old saying, you know, don't fight the Fed. Congress has tended to be very deferential to the Federal Reserve. What's another thing that's been remarkable this spring and summer is that the Senate Banking Committee, led by Chair Tim Scott, has been willing to ask ask the monarch some tough questions about their buildings and other things that are going on. And Senator Rick Scott, who's a senator from Florida, and Rand Paul, you know, have now joined forces calling for greater Federal Reserve transparency and accountability. So there are some signs. I mean, the Federal, under our Constitution, the Fed's not supposed to be a monarchy. So hopefully Congress can rein it in and, abolish the monarchy.
I mean, would you do me the favor, Professor? You probably do this in the Econ 101 class, but tell my audience and tell me, what exactly is the Fed? It's not a government agency, but it's not entirely a private entity either. So what kind of weird animal is it?
Okay. This is probably more than Econ 1, maybe Econ 21 or 22, if we called it that. But the Fed is complex. It was designed in 1913. We were still under the gold standard. So really the original purpose of the Federal Reserve was to be the banker to the banks. And consequently, it has a regional structure. There's 12 regional Fed banks. One of them is the San Francisco District, actually covers Oregon and Washington State and Alaska and Hawaii. And the headquarters of the San Francisco District is, of course, in San Francisco. And the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco has its own board of directors. There are nine of them. And when the Fed was designed by Congress, the board of directors of each regional Fed would be pretty independent, that they would choose the top officials of the Federal Reserve Bank, and they would oversee the budget and the operations of the Federal Reserve Bank. In the original Federal Reserve Act in 1913, so we're talking more than 100 years ago, Congress did create an oversight board in D.C., but it was small, about 200 people. And it was supposed to kind of just make sure that there was no fraud or gross, you know, negligence or something. But what's happened, some of it happened through congressional acts in the 1930s, but a lot of it just happened through kind of the evolution of the culture of this institution. Is more and more power getting concentrated in D.C., in the Federal Reserve Board in D.C. at the headquarters. The Fed's headquarters is now bigger than any of the 12 regional Federal Reserve banks. The Fed's headquarters now micromanages the budgets of all those 12. The Federal Reserve Board now effectively picks the top official at each of the regional Fed banks. And so you might even say it doesn't look at all like the way Congress really designed it. Not at all.
Well, let me ask you this, Professor. Do you mean, could in theory each one of those regional Feds say, you know, we think rates should be lower. We're dropping them 50 basis points. Could they do that?
Yes, on paper, the way Congress designed it, the Federal Reserve, it has a Monetary Policy Committee. It meets every 6 weeks. And the Monetary Policy Committee, the chair is just first among equals. The chair just kind of sets the agenda and kind of moderates the discussion. And that's the way Congress designed it in 1935. When we went off the gold standard, Congress created this Monetary Policy Committee and said, okay, you guys are going to be running the monetary policy now. And the chair is first among equals. Think about it like the Supreme Court. We have a Chief Justice. Yep. We have Associate Justices. The Chief Justice is first among equals and sometimes gets outvoted.
You don't.
Okay, now at the Federal Reserve, the Fed chair has never lost a vote, and not even close in the last 20 or 30 years. And so you asked a question like, could a regional Federal Reserve Bank president dissent?
Yeah.
Under the law, of course they can. And in the past, they used to dissent.
Then why don't they?
But,
I mean, everybody who has a political position says, I want to flex my muscles now and then, don't they?
Okay, you should set up an interview with the president of the San Francisco Fed or the president of the Chicago Fed. And that's a great question to ask them. I think one of the things you must have noticed is whenever you hear about the Federal Reserve, whenever you see a media report about it, you always see the photograph of the Fed chair. You know, 10 years ago, it was Janet Yellen. For the last 7 years, it's been Jerome Powell.
Yep.
People nicknamed Jay Powell. Okay, but it's always the Fed chair. It's like the monarch, right? And these other people are just subordinates and deputies, and their job is to uphold the stature of the monarch.
On another occasion, Professor, I'd like to talk about whether or not we could just get rid of it altogether and say instead of the Bank of Last Resort.
I think it's an important question, and I think the financial system is changing. This new bill that Congress has passed about stable coins will lead to some further changes.
Well, and I hope that they do. Professor, it's a pleasure to have you on. That's Professor Andrew Levin. He's a professor of economics at Dartmouth College. Professor, it's a pleasure to have you on. Back in a moment. Glad to get your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network. With everything...
Lars' daily question to all the Dems in our government.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Now, the one with the brain, Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I frequently warn you about labor unions, and especially about the unions that claim to represent America's teachers. Lately, they've become even more political than they ever have been before, and they seem not to care about whether or not they produce teachers that produce educated kids in America. And here I'm talking about the government-run public schools, the badly run government-run public schools, because they routinely fail about half the kids. If you take a look at the national test scores in math, reading, science, or any other serious subject, you find that about half the kids get a somewhat decent education and the other half do not. And then you have to ask yourself, if you were running any kind of operation, any kind of business, and half of what you made did not meet the standards and ended up in a dumpster somewhere. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about there. But now they're getting even worse. And I want to give you the details of what Randy Weingarten, the American Federation of Teachers president, that's one of the largest teachers unions in America, has had to say. And the people that she is allying herself with, the kind of indoctrination that is likely headed right for your kids if you've been foolish enough to leave them in the government schools. But first, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll be glad to get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. If you're a naysayer, as always, we're going to put you right to the head of the list. If you want to send an email instead, it's talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can consider our X poll every day. Today's question has to do with something announced by the Trump administration yesterday. I'm a huge supporter of Donald Trump, but I do not like this idea. And I've always reserved the right to object when Donald Trump does something that I disagree with. And I've done it all the way through his first term and through his second term as well. The Trump administration launched a program. This was late yesterday. They say it will allow Americans to share their personal health data and medical records across multiple systems and apps that are run by private tech companies, promising they'll make it easier to access your health care records and monitor your wellness. And they have about 60 different tech companies, including the usual bunch, Google, Amazon, Apple, healthcare giants like United Health Group and CVS Health. I don't like the idea. So I framed the question this way. I think it's relatively neutral in its framing. Should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? My answer to that is no. You should not trust them. And the president promises that this is an opt-in system, meaning that you can choose to take part in it and you can choose not to take part in it. I suspect that that is only going to be temporary, not to Donald Trump, but temporary to the rest of us, that at some point they're going to say, well, if you want to use our healthcare system, you're going to have to be involved in this online basis so that we can easily share the health information around. I would point out to you that an awful lot of tech companies and government agencies have databases that have been hacked and their information stolen. And then just imagine what somebody might use your healthcare data for all kinds of nefarious purposes. In any case, you can find today's X poll at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Yesterday, we asked you whether or not you should trust the Chinese communist-controlled TikTok and their app to police misinformation in America. They say they're doing something that's not that terribly different from what X and Meta, or formerly Facebook, are doing, and that is community notes, which allow people using TikTok to be able to correct misinformation. The problem is it gives the Chinese Communist government in Beijing a perfect entree to the United States to be able to say, well, that information is false, and you won't know whether it's just another American who's using TikTok, since they really don't have TikTok in China. It's funny that it's a Chinese company, but TikTok is not allowed. The American version of it is not allowed to be in China. Why, that would involve a lot of free speech, and you know that the communists in Beijing do not believe in free speech for the people of China. But they love free speech when it comes to Americans because it means they have an opportunity to manipulate Americans. So, speaking of manipulation, Randy Weingarten, we mention her name from time to time, president of the American Federation of Teachers, she has announced a partnership with one of the most evil organizations on planet Earth, known as the World Economic Forum. I'm sure that some of you have heard of Klaus Schwab. He has now stepped down as the head of that group. But this is dangerous. It is absolutely crazy because she says she wants to cozy up to the Chinese Communist Party. WEF is a group that promotes digital IDs for citizens. It pushes industry killing ideas like green energy. And yet a teachers union that represents American teachers, some of them are the teachers that your kids have in classes in government run schools here. The AFT, American Federation of Teachers, has been working up to this kind of partnership. They say their members passed a resolution at a meeting this spring that called for climate smart and sustainable schools. Now, why a teachers union should be involved in how energy is used in schools, I don't know. I thought that they represented teachers looking for better salary, better benefits, better working conditions. That's what a labor union is supposed to do. But instead, they're doing something else. The New York Post reports that Weingarten strong-armed the Biden administration into keeping schools shut down during the COVID pandemic when they didn't need to be shut down because it meant a lot of teachers could still collect a paycheck, but they didn't actually have to show up at class and teach your kids. And as a result, a lot of the kids who were in school 5 years ago when the pandemic began, they are now lagging behind in education today because they have never caught up and the teachers' unions have done effectively nothing to catch those kids up. But they did get a lot of money out of the U.S. Congress. And then holding your kids' education hostage, the union got billions of dollars from the taxpayers. They used closed-down schools as a bargaining chip, as they often have. I mean, this is one of the reasons I don't admire what labor unions do, because they will say, your kids don't get education until our members get what they want. And now Randy Weingarten wants to strike a deal with the folks at WEF. I don't think this is good for America. I know it's not good for your kids. To your calls now. Let's start with Steve in Salem. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, Enid Kotex is remodeling the governor's mansion with all new windows. And it's 100-and-some windows. It's probably going to cost the taxpayers over $300,000.
Wow. And what's the excuse for doing that kind of thing right now when the state claims it's short of cash?
I don't know. When I saw it, I couldn't believe it.
So you saw the project underway?
Yeah, they got the windows all boarded up.
Maybe she's just anticipating public opposition to her tax plans, and she decided to board up the windows, kind of like people do when they have a business in a downtown and they know that Antifa is coming this weekend.
Well, that could be.
I'm still curious, Steve. They spent $300,000 to buy that emergency on-demand generator to power the governor's mansion, and it runs on fossil fuels, it runs on propane. And I always wondered, did they ever finish installing that thing? Because they spent an amazing amount of money to buy a backup generator so that when everybody else's lights go out, Tina Kotek and her crazy, alcoholic, mentally ill wife will have their lights stay on during the power outage. Steve, thanks for the call. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. Does Lars finally agree with Chuck Schumer?
Of course there's some wasteful spending, but you don't use a meat axe and cut everything.
Pass out the chainsaws and welcome back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm always glad to welcome back to the program Rabbi Yaakov Menken, who's Managing Director of the Coalition for Jewish Values, the largest rabbinic public policy organization in America, and a newly appointed member of President Trump's Religious Leaders Advisory Board to the Religious Liberty Commission. Rabbi, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rabbi, you got to tell me this. I'm trying to wrap my head around, what does it mean when countries like France and Canada's kind of a country, you know, their monarchy, and they share their king with another country that we have a great relationship with. What does it mean when they recognize a Palestinian state that has never existed?
It's because they're buying into delusion and anti-Semitism and rewarding terrorism and kowtowing to terrorists. It's all of the above. It's the most disgraceful behavior one could expect, especially after what happened on October 7th. The Palestinian Authority is totally out of control of their own people. Their own people elected in Gaza, they elected Hamas to lead them. The reason why Palestine has not held an election, they're specifically recognizing a country that collapsed from democracy. They're endorsing it as it became a dictatorship, a totalitarian state, because Mahmoud Abbas, who's now in the 20th year of his four-year term, refuses to hold new elections because he knows he will get voted out by the supporters of Hamas, the supporters of terrorism, the so-called innocent Gazans who keep, this is the reason why the left, like New York Times, why are they putting pictures of sickly individuals with a young child with cerebral palsy.
Yep.
Put him on their front page as if he was a victim of famine.
And that, by the way, for everybody listening, that example was bad enough that the New York Times literally, I think it was day before yesterday, came out and said they did a mea culpa. And they said, yeah, that actually wasn't a starving kid. It was a kid with a medical condition. And apparently the rest of his family is reasonably well fed. And yet they bought into the Hamas propaganda, didn't they?
You know, it's actually, it's worse than you describe, because their mea culpa, their admission of error. First of all, they couched it not as an apology, but as a clarification that he also had other medical conditions. Wait a minute. No. He had cerebral palsy, and he was not starving. He was never starving. It was a lie from beginning to end. You never heard the New York Times say that. And they put that out on their public, whatever the channel is, they're like 55,000 Twitter subscribers, whereas their main channel has 5.5 million. So the lie went out to 5.5 million, and the correction went out to 55,000. The New York Times is actually not interested in correcting the error.
Well,
they demonize the Jews. The demonization of the Jews, there's only one way to look at it. The New York Times is an anti-Semitic propaganda paper on the lines of Der Stürmer.
Let me ask you this about the allegation that there's starvation. I've said there are, and tell me if I'm wrong, hundreds of trucks full of food waiting to go in. But the minute they go into Gaza, Hamas takes control of the food, and then Hamas uses that as a way to get compliance. And I said, most Americans would have a tough time wrapping their head around this idea. But, I mean, go to Somalia even 20 or 30 years ago. If you want to be in charge of a country and you have a population of people and you say, if you want to eat, you'll do what we tell you to do. And if you don't do what we tell you to do, you're not eating. I mean, it's that simple. Americans, I think, couldn't imagine that you'd live in a place where your food, your water, and everything else is controlled by somebody who demands absolute obedience, or you don't get dinner.
Look at North Korea. It's absolutely, this is the way that they operate. And people need to understand, those who are arguing for more humanitarian aid to Gaza are trying to prolong the war. They may be too stupid to realize it, but this whole idea from beginning to end that the Israelis, the ones who were attacked, the ones who faced genocidal terror, they have to feed the people who sent the terrorists to kill them? You know, the residents of Gaza elected Hamas to lead them. For 20 years since then, when Israel closed its border to prevent being massacred by these people, they said, oh, it's a siege of Gaza, as humanitarian aid actually went in day by day for the last 20 years. In fact, the population of Gaza doubled while they were claiming a genocide. I mean, how stupid is that? Exponential growth and genocide don't go together. They're polar opposites. And yet people who are watching Gaza grow were accusing Israel of genocide. Well, now they're saying Israel's responsible for feeding the populace. That is moronic from the beginning. And the fact that all of this aid is getting in there and they're crying starvation, any starvation that's going on in there is solely the responsibility of Hamas from beginning to end. Hamas is actually the force responsible for feeding its populace. The Israelis and the international community should not be sending any food into Hamas territory until Hamas buckles and the people throw them from power. Because that will be what happens, of course, if there really were famine in Gaza, they would start shooting the Hamasniks and get them out of power and free the hostages. But no, we have to prolong the war by giving Hamas all the food it needs.
Let me step back to the recognition, though, for just a second, and that's this. I don't understand what they're recognizing. Are they recognizing the Palestinian Authority on the West Bank of the Jordan River? Are they recognizing the state of Palestine as the slice that's Gaza, you know, that's, I think, 70 or 80 miles away, you know, over by the Mediterranean Sea? Or are they recognizing both of them? What exactly are they recognizing when Canada and France and all these other countries stand up and recognize Palestine? Do you know?
They recognize the ones who show up in the UN, and so I guess that's the ones in the West Bank and Ramallah. But you know, again, you know, it's like it's a total bone thrown to anti-Semitic. The whole thing is anti-Semitic stupidity. The name Palestine comes right from the Greco-Roman colonialists who wanted to separate the Jews from Judea. That's why the name exists. It's never represented an indigenous population, certainly not Arabs. My gosh, for 2,000 years, when people said a Palestinian, they meant a Jew. That's who the Palestinians were, obviously. And then the Arabs pick up the name the Jews discarded in 1948 like a hermit crab, and they prance around claiming that the land has always been theirs. That is ridiculous. This is from the get-go. And the idea that they need another state, Jordan is the Palestinian state. It's 77% of British Mandatory Palestine. You want to live in Palestine? Go to Jordan. That's fine. But you want to destroy the only democracy in the Middle East. You want to destroy the only place where Jews and Arabs both have civil rights. Good going, people. That's not fighting apartheid. That's creating apartheid. That's
and creating by the way, racism. You know what the rabbi is talking about? I've done 5 visits there. All the studies, all the surveys that have been done of the Arab population of Israel proper have said they don't want to leave. They like it there. I mean, they say, look, we've got citizenship, we can elect representatives to the Knesset, we can vote, we can do just about anything that anybody else can do. There is almost no distinction between the Arab population of Israel, who are Israeli citizens. And you tell that to people in America, and most people say, no, there are no Arabs in Israel. Yeah, a couple of million of them. I mean, they might be 20%, 25% of the population. That is Rabbi Yaakov Menken. He's the managing director at the Coalition for Jewish Values, and President Trump has appointed him to the Religious Leaders Advisory Board. Rabbi, thanks for the time. Back in a moment, I'll get to your phone calls and emails. It's Conspiracy Theory Thursday. Your calls are welcome at 866-439-5277. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
Naysayers go to the head of the line at the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to take your phone calls and your emails. This segment of the show, always brought to you by Oregon Medical Centers, the regenerative medical specialists at Oregon Medical Centers. And our X poll today, should Americans trust big tech with their most personal health data? This was rolled out late yesterday at the White House by the Trump administration, and they said, look, we're launching a program. We're going to put all the health data for Americans who want to sign up for this program. They say it's optional now. I have a feeling that may be temporary, because I have a feeling that the way these systems seem to go, it's, oh, you're going to do it temporarily. It's opt-in right now, as the president described it. But how long before some of the major health institutions start saying, no, if you want to take advantage of our health care, you're going to have to be part of this program. I mean, I've already seen some places like hospitals where you say, I'd like to see my lab results. And they say, well, log on to your whatever the name of the app is, and you can get your lab results there. And what if you say, I don't want to do that? There probably is a workaround to go around it, but an awful lot of institutions start with something that's optional, and then they move to something that's mandatory. Let's go to Randy. Hey, Randy, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I know three high school teachers, one in Kalama, Washington, and two in the Evergreen School District.
Yeah.
There's only one thing that's going to change our school system with graduation. It's not the teachers, it's discipline. There is no discipline in school, in the high schools.
I agree with you, and it is obtained. You realize the teachers are part of one of the most powerful political weapons in America.
Yes.
Okay, and that's a union. So if the teachers went to their union and they said, we want in our next contract, there must be a system of discipline imposed on the students. Because right now, teachers' unions routinely will walk in. They don't just negotiate salary and benefits. They'll negotiate the length of class periods. They'll negotiate all kinds of things that I think go way outside of what should be a matter of negotiation between employees and the school district. They will want to have a say in all kinds of things. Well, if they have that power, then if the union members themselves said to their union, in our next contract, we must have discipline in this school, the school, I think, would cave in, and they would do it. And it would be good for the students. It'd be good for the teachers. And I can think of a number of models that would actually work. You just say, we will have no misbehavior in the school. And you say, okay, what happens if a kid misbehaves? First time, trip to the office, lecture from the principal. What happens when that doesn't work? Well, then you get suspended from school for a couple of days. I've even suggested, and one of my ideas, Randy, was this, an in-school suspension, especially for high school students. I'm not so much talking about middle school and elementary school, but if you said to kids, we're not going to expel you, we're going to suspend you in the school. Well, where am I supposed to go? You're going to go down to a classroom that will be overseen by a teacher. And if you say, what happens if those students get so out of control, the teacher can't handle them? Well, then at that point, we're going to send you to a classroom with the school cop. Now, that's when we had school cops. And you say, what if the school cop can't handle it? You know, you're just such a little terror that you've decided you're not going to obey any of the rules. Then you know what? That police officer picks up the radio, calls for a car. When a car is free, it comes by, picks the kids up, takes him to the police station, and he gets parked in an interview room until his parents pick him up. Now, if that started happening, once it was clear that there was going to be a set of consequences, how much misbehavior do you think you'd get?
Well, here's my question, Lars. I agree with what you say. Does the union have the power to change the discipline rules? And
I just said that. No, Randy, I just said that. They don't write the rules, but the union has all the power in the world. When they say our teachers are not coming back to class after the pandemic was clearly over, and guess what? They didn't come back to class. Did their paycheck stop? No. So the union has the power to tell the people who write the rules, and that is the school superintendent and the school board. The union can dictate that, and they can say, you will change this, and if you don't, our members are going to walk out. And they can even say, we want it made part of our contract. The other idea I've got for you, Randy, is this. Because, you know, over the years, I thought I was always suggesting ideas for how to fix a problem. If I'm going to fault the way things are run, then I should also say, and here's how I'd fix it. You know what I do, Randy? Most schools have a sort of an office in the middle, and then they have big wings that stick out left and right or north and south or whatever. I would say this. We're going to have a school of excellence, and that's down the hallway to the right. And you say, and as a parent, you say, I want my kid in the school of excellence. Okay, you and your kid sign this contract. You agree to obey a set of rules for conduct. You'll turn in your homework on time. You'll do all these things. You will not backtalk the teacher. You will be quiet when the teacher walks in. And if the parent says, what happens if my kid breaks the rules a couple of times? Well, then he gets in the warehouse school. The warehouse school is out of the office and down the hall to the left. You say, what's down there? We basically warehouse your kid the way schools are run right now, where your kid can show up and we'll hand you a diploma or a certificate at the end of 12 years. So where would you like your kid to be? There may be some parents who say, I don't care. Fine, your kid's going to the warehouse. You know, going down to the hallway to a regular classroom looks the same as any other. There's still a teacher in there. Teacher can make his or her best efforts to teach. But if you say, I want my kid in the school of excellence down the hallway to the right, then your kid has to obey the rules. And the minute you start to disobey to any great degree, you end up back in the warehouse. Tell me how many parents would tolerate their kid being in the warehouse part of the school. The Lars